Hi, this is Neil Funk, and you're listening to Frank on the Chicago Bullseye.
Hello, this is Nate Friedel, and you're listening to Fred on the Chicago Bullseye. Hi, this is Chuck Swirsky, and you're listening to Fred on the Chicago Bullseye.
I'm Bob Love of the Chicago Bulls, and you listen to Freddie.
100% right, Kevin. I don't think this is stressed enough. There's coaches that want you to shade a player to the baseline, shade him to the center of the court, depending on how the team is playing offensively. I just had the situation tonight with a coach. I'm the head coach of my son's team, and I had a parent screaming at his kid to get out on these guys on the three-point line. We played a team that was twice as tall as us, and I didn't want them coming out. I wanted to force them to shoot threes and chuck it up at a horrible percentage. Because if we extend the defense, we're gonna have trouble down low. We're too small, you know. And I had to go up and talk to the guy, explain him what we're doing, you know. So I think that happens in
wait,
the
wait, 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 back up. I need more on this story. So you actually went up during the game to talk to the parent?
during the quarter break after the guys
okay,
left.
During the break,
I just ran up to him and said, please stop. Please.
You don't shut the hell up. You're getting young to keep you out of the gym? Or how did you phrase it?
I basically just said, hey, yeah, please stop yelling at your son. He's doing exactly what I want him to do. We're trying to get him to, you know, stop chuck threes as opposed to beat us down low. And it worked. Another incredible coaching victory on my part. We're undefeated. That's another story.
how did the first story, how did the parent respond?
I'm sorry. I didn't know. I didn't, you know, I'm, yeah, exactly. It's fine. It was fine. Like, I do love the passion. I do love people trying to, you know, get their best out of their children. But the kid was doing exactly what I wanted him to do, and the father was upset because he wasn't contesting the three, thinking that it's like a pro game or something. These are sixth graders, you know. So
it's almost like you were coaching LaMelo Ball.
almost exactly like that. Oh, thank God we won, or else it would have been a bad situation, I'm sure. But
yep.
You know, so I wanted to touch on this. You touched on a great point. Like, I don't think defensive statistics really prove anything. You know what I do? I like, here's a stat I like, or the, to find out if a guy's a good defender. Every time I meet a professional and I get 5 minutes or 10 minutes with him, I want to know who's the best defender he's faced. Or if it's a player in the Bulls, and I've been blessed to talk to quite a few of them, who's the best defender on that team? And to a man, almost unequivocally, like, who's the best defender in the Bulls? Chris Dunn. And nobody wants to play against Chris Dunn. So my counter to Tom Haverstraw and everyone else who just wants to see this guy out of town and hand everything to Ryan A., do you really feel great when we play the Hawks and Trae Young's out there? Do you feel better if Chris Dunn is on him, or do you feel Ryan A.? How about Kyrie Irving? You know, how about Oladipo when he comes back healthy? As long as he's not a problem in the locker room, there is no plus to trading Chris Dunn for nothing right now. What say you?
Well, you made a very good points there. And our Mark Strotman, who does great work for NBCSportsChicago.com, wrote a piece on Friday outlining why the Bulls should hang on to Chris Dunn for now. He qualifies it for now. And he goes in and makes some wonderful points, which I completely agree with. Number one is he's got no trade value. That is clear. If they were going to, the Bulls, given their roster right now, I think they have like 16 or 17 players if you include two-way contracts on the roster right now. They have a full roster. Clearly, they were shopping Dunn. We know for a fact they were shopping Dunn.
Sure.
There was no trade for him. No trade, certainly, they thought they would get any value for. So he's got no trade value, number one. Number two, Mark wrote that he's actually played decent without Zach LaVine.
Yes.
Which is true, and has some numbers there. And also said that Coby White probably isn't quite ready to get significant minutes yet.
Also true.
Which is true.
Yep. All great points. How did I miss this article? First of all, I love that guy. I'd say 90% of the stuff I read from him, I'm nodding my head, which really shows how intelligent Mark is, because that is the first time. It's just like not cool to defend Chris Dunn anymore, and for him to do that and step up and do that, I'm very glad to hear, and I got to read that article.
A lot of people don't know this. So Mark Strotman is the voice behind our Bulls Talk Twitter account.
I did not know that.
He is the main voice that you see clapping back at people and hopping in people's mentions and just, like, he is an absolute genius when it comes to running that account. So I'm a huge fan of Strotman's.
He sure is, man. That is great. I had no idea about that. That's brilliant. Because, man, what a standing O for him, because he definitely goes against the grain and does not – he really causes, I think, people to think. You got some really excellent writers over there, and he's one of them I really enjoy reading. So yeah, it sounds like you're
– Yeah, to your point about Dunn, I think right now, unless it's evident that there's going to be an issue in the locker room, there's going to be an issue between – Kobe White and Chris Dunn, or Shaq and Chris Dunn, or whoever you want to bring in the mix. There's really not that big of a reason to trade them. The issue is, again, depth at the wing, and if you do get one or two injuries, I mean, hypothetically, if Otto were to get hurt and Hutch were to get hurt, they'd have, like, no one that could put out three. I mean, I think Thad Young would actually probably start at the three, and they'd make two, but it's not ideal. It's not an ideal situation. So until a good deal comes up that makes sense, you keep Chris Dunn for now.
It's like defensive versatility, it seems like, only matters when we criticize Jabari Parker. It's like Dunn has defensive versatility to guard threes in this league. There's tremendous value in that. Leave him on the team as long as he doesn't cause problems. And to back that up, I got to meet him in April. Every person I've talked to around the organization has nothing but good things to say about Chris Dunn, for the most part. Now, I'm just a fan, a super fan, so you know they could be covering for him. But you know, from what I get, I think I'm hoping that bringing in all this competition will cause him to rise his game, you know, raise his game, and really rise to the occasion. So let's see. Let's hope so. I want to get into a little bit. So now that we explored the East a little bit, I want to get into the West really quick. And I'm sorry I didn't put this out there. We're getting close to our timer, but I do want to close with this one. I'll get your take on this. You know, I think there's seven clear teams in the West that are going to make the playoffs, right? It's going to be a fantastic run. And I think we all can agree it's Golden State, Houston, the two LA teams, Utah, Denver. I love Denver. That's my probably my number one seed. Who am I missing now? Portland, seven. Who's your eighth team in the West that you feel is going to make the playoffs, and who's that battle, you know, between?
If I had to pick a team right now, it honestly would be the Pelicans.
Ahead
of the
Spurs.
Zion hasn't played a game, but from those, 15 minutes of summer league that we saw, it was impressive. I really love what they've done this offseason, and so... Of that other tier of teams, I think it probably is going to be between the Pelicans and probably the Mavericks. The Spurs are still coached by Popovich, and they still have some pretty good young players, so they'll absolutely be in the mix. But in the West, you're going to need to win 47 or 48 games to make the postseason.
Yeah.
And I don't think quite San Antonio is going to be up for that. So I think that eighth spot's probably going to come down to the Pelicans or Mavericks. I think the Mavericks are going to be poised with the healthy Porzingis and the second year of Doncic are going to be poised to make a pretty big leap up from last year. Then when you get down to it, you know, Phoenix is still trash. Sacramento's okay. Minnesota's going to drop off their win total for 36 last year. Memphis is in trouble. And Oklahoma City, with all the turnover they've had and the dirty draft picks they've gotten over the next 5 years, they're going to see a significant drop-off from what they did last year, and I don't see them making the postseason. I think even with Chris Paul, I question, is Chris Paul going to play 80 games this year? You know, what is he going to be like completely running that team? I don't know if they're going to win more than 33 or 35 games. With that roster. So between the eighth seed, honestly, Pelicans and Mavericks right now, I'd say, are the two favorites here in late July.
And who's your team to come out of the West?
Gosh. How healthy is Klay Thompson going to be?
Goodness.
That's the big one.
Are you picking? Oh, my gosh. You're picking. So let's say he comes back, February.
No, well, I'm talking it through my head. I'm not necessarily picking it. How healthy is Klay going to be? You know?
Yeah. I got you.
If he's 100%, right now, I'd say the Clippers. You've got to say the Clippers. I think I like what LA did. Losing Kawhi, I think DeMarcus Cousins could be great on that team. Could be. It's still a great unknown, you know, what he's really got left and if he can be the player he was a couple of years ago. I would handicap it, Clippers and Lakers in that order, with the Clippers coming out of the West. However, with the caveat that a healthy, completely healthy Klay Thompson, I could see the Warriors blowing past both those teams.
Do you feel Chris Paul will be traded before the trade deadline?
His contract is so difficult to trade.
Yeah,
it is like an extinction level event of a contract. There are only a handful of teams that can make a deal that even works at all. And I think they certainly were trying to trade him after he got traded to Oklahoma City. And I think they found that the two or three teams around the league that could make a deal happen, just couldn't pull it off. To me, the Wizards make a little sense. I could see Washington going, all right, we'll give you John Wall, you give us Chris Paul, and we'll shake hands and call it a day. I could see that happening potentially if the Wizards feel like, because I'm not certain that John Wall is going to play a single game this season.
No, I don't think he will. Yeah.
If they make that trade, you know, they'll have a healthy Chris Paul, a Bradley Beal, they could certainly make a push for the eighth seed. In the Eastern Conference and make the playoffs. Like that wouldn't a Chris Paul for John Wall straight up trade would not surprise me if it happens before training camp starts in late September. Outside of that, you know, there's not too many teams that really can pull off a deal in season with having to match the salaries to get Chris Paul. There are teams in the off season that can do it, but here's the other major issue with Chris Paul. Every year you wait to trade him, his contract gets more difficult to trade.
Yeah.
And so, and he gets a year older. And so, like, I'm not that optimistic that he's not going to finish his career in Oklahoma City.
Oh my gosh.
It's just a really, really hard con. I don't think people fully understand that if you look at the numbers, so I'll break it down for you right now. So Chris Paul is due $38.5 million this upcoming season. After that, he's due $41 million the following year, and he's got a player option, which he'd be insane not to take, for $44 million in the 2021-22 season. That is a boatload of money for a guy who's way north of 30 and is going to go depreciate in terms of skill level every year. As well as he could play this year, he's not going to be as good next year as he was this year and the following year. And his contract just gets so difficult to trade that I find it really hard to believe that all of a sudden next year a trade's going to make sense where Chris Paul is due to make $41.4 million the following year.
Kev, I'm not a Chris Paul fan at all either. I mean, he's, to me, well past his prime, and I thought he had a lot of pretty bad moments in the playoffs, but I still think that contract, and as a player, I'd rather take that than John Wall. I don't know why. What would be the advantage for Oklahoma City to take John Wall in that contract?
Well, what is Oklahoma City's seemingly game plan right now as an organization? Rebuild through the draft, right?
Yeah, well, that's a good point. Okay, so they're trading him the tank. Yeah.
If you trade for John Wall now, who's going to sit out the whole season, then you're certainly going to probably be the worst team in the league, though I think Charlotte is going to be absolutely horrendous this year. But then you're essentially guaranteeing you're going to be a top three pick, right? You're certainly top three in the lottery, which is no longer guaranteed top three in the draft. But in terms of you're likely looking at a complete rebuild. And John Wall, if he's healthy the following season, is actually a decent player. And he's still relatively young. And so, like, sure, you're not going to have him for a full year and you're trading away, but, like, John Wall is 28 years old right now. Chris Paul's 34. And so you're still going to have several prime years of John Wall, assuming he can recover from his injury and be something near what he was before. You're still going to have several years of some really good John Wall there, which hopefully coincides for the rest of your team and getting better. But that's just me, and I'm not running the Thunder right now.
I don't know a player whose game is almost completely dependent on athleticism that is the worst injury to have. You know, it is really bad. It's worse than an ACL. I can't think of many players that came back and approached their previous level from that injury.
Yeah.
It's a tough call, man. Oh my, there are so many fascinating subplots of this season. And just, I know we're over our time, but I just want to finish with two more. Like, do you think it's possible? Let me throw this out there. Let's think things go south to Miami. Do you think Miami would look to trade Jimmy Butler this year?
No, I don't think. Like, let's say they, what, they start off 5-25, which, oh, that's never happened before. So, like, no, even if it's that bad, I don't think so. I think Pat Riley is putting all his chips on Jimmy Butler right now and is probably hoping that next summer, I haven't looked at their cap situation for next year, but I think they'll have a decent amount. Is probably hoping that they're going to, you know, attract a star and rebuild that way. But no, I don't see them. I mean, Jimmy, I think, is going to finish his career in Miami.
And then Houston, which I forgot to mention, the West. I should have put them in there. They're in the top seven. That whole situation with Westbrook. How do you feel that's going to work out? Will it work out? Do you feel like they can challenge, or are they going to take a step back?
It's going to be fun to watch, certainly. I don't know how Westbrook is going to thrive in that perimeter-oriented offense that they have. I mean, in years past, everything was done to make James Harden better. The entire roster was built around take advantage of James's skill set, and it worked. I'm not that confident it's going to work with Russ. I mean, Russ is a great athletic point guard, and he is a great scorer, and he certainly fills the stat sheet, much like Harden does. But it's going to be fun to watch. I don't know if it's going to work, though. I mean, like, it just, I've got, in terms of, like, my concern, that my confidence level that's going to work from 1 to 10, it's like a 3 in Houston. Like, it's going to be fun. It's going to be like a can't-look-away type thing. But are they going to come out and win 50 games next year? I don't think so.
Yeah, that's another great subplot. Also, what's going on with Jaylen Brown in Boston, and I think Jaylen Brown's very Michael Wigginish. I think you give that guy a max deal, he's nowhere near worth that, and that will screw up Boston going forward. But you can't really let him walk. It's going to be a very interesting situation there too. So, oh my gosh, the subplots in the NBA are just
same thing with Tatum. I think Tatum is due. I mean, this is going to be Tatum's
absolutely
breakout year, right? It has to be.
It has to be, right. I mean, this is it, right? I mean, but it's going to be interesting to see how he fits with Kemba. You know, do you think those two are going to fit really well together? They don't have Horford now as a defensive anchor. I mean, Horford to Cantor. I mean, my goodness, that's your trade-off now? I mean, I think Boston could seriously. They didn't do great last year with, I think, superior talent, and everybody's assuming they're going to be better. I don't know, based on what, really? You know, I'm more
confident in Boston. I think that the whole Kyrie dynamic caused a lot of issues for that team last year.
Mm-hmm.
And I think a big part of it was their chemistry. I think they're going to be, like, losing Horford hurts, but I think adding Kemba is an upgrade. I think Tatum is now going to have free reign to shine in that team, and I think they've got a pretty good roster. So I like Boston, certainly a lot more than I like what's going on in Houston.
Yep. Kevin, as always, you bring it every time you come on the Chicago Bullseye. Great stuff again today, and I think we're both in agreement. The season is going to be much brighter this year for the beloved Bull. If they have some modicum of health, it's going to be a glorious season, and all my predictions are going to come true. It's really going to be
fun. I don't know about that, Fred. I don't know about all your predictions.
How dare you?
7%. What's your... What is it, North Dakota State scientists say your prediction?
The Northeast University scientists have found that 93% of my predictions are correct, 7% are wrong. We got to wish our good mutual friend Mark Kay from Australia a happy 40th
birthday.
Yeah, we got to
wish him a happy birthday.
Happy 40 to you, brother.
Happy birthday, Mark.
Yeah.
I know he's listening. But like, back to the Bulls, just played meaningful basketball in April. Like, if they miss out on the playoffs by one or two games, I'm going to be okay with that. But just, like, play meaningful basketball that last week of the season.
Yeah.
That's all that I want.
Yeah, and I want to see one of those guys take the jump to an all-star status. I don't know if it's LaVine. I think LaVine is specifically positioned to have an incredible year with all the shooting they have around him now. But, you know, him or Markkanen or one of those guys, I'm not expecting it from Wendell, but I do want to see him take a jump too. But, you know, one of those two guys make an all-star game, you know, even if it's odd.
Well, the all-star game is at the United Center.
There you go.
So it'd be really nice to have Zach or Laurie representing the Bulls in that game. I'm hoping Zach will represent the Bulls in the slam dunk contest, but I would love to see one of them play on Sunday.
Yep, and I think one of them will make it. So the good news is there's a 93% chance of it happening. So now that I've predicted it. Take it easy, brother. Kev, have a great
weekend,
my man. Always good talking to you. Take it easy, brother. Bye-bye.
You too.